From Sundress Media Productions, this is Spectrum 360. Welcome. Your Spectrum 360 host is Mark Skogman. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. and online anytime via podcast. Thank you for listening for the next hour. Spectrum 360 is progressive and features political talk and humor and also the arts and popular culture. Spectrum 360 starts right now. Let's get to work.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Any one of you who feels cynical, just consider where we have been.
You want the truth? You should seek it out for yourself. That's what they're afraid of. You.
This is information the world needs to know.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
Thank you. Bless you. At the end of the meeting, it's the beginning of the movement. Thank you.
Yeah. Hello.
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 Hello. Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
That's right, folks.
Spectrum 360. From the white sand beaches and sun and pina coladas and palm trees in the beautiful and tropical Tampa Bay area in the state of Florida on the eastern coast of the Gulf of Mexico.
Got the sun on my shoulders and my toes in the sand, just dreaming, sitting.
This is the radio program Spectrum 360 for Monday, the 8th of December, 2014.
You have an incoming transmission.
Not be televised.
The voice of news information has
the purpose of this program is to bring vital news.
Welcome. I'm your host, Mark Skogman, with associate producer and occasional co-host, Jerry Weeks.
You imbecile! You bloated idiot!
He is the most interesting man in the world.
You're so ugly, you could be a modern art masterpiece.
What was that? Oh, it's just the usual greeting on Spectrum 360. Welcome, everyone. Spectrum 360 is copyright 2014 by Mark Skogman. Copying and sharing the Spectrum 360 podcast for personal use is authorized. Okay, on Spectrum 360 in this edition, live interview in the studio with Reverend Bruce Wright, host of the radio program Revolutionary Road, former co-host of this program, Spectrum 360. Revolutionary Road now broadcasts directly preceding this program every Monday night at 10 p.m. He is also the co-director of My Place in Recovery program and Thrift Store. I will interview Bruce regarding the recent demonstrations in the Tampa Bay area and in the nation regarding police brutality and the recent deaths of Michael Brown and Eric Garner. Reverend Wright participated in the March Against Police Brutality in St. Petersburg, Florida, this last Saturday. That's the 6th of December, 2014, just 2 days ago. This march was attended by about 160 people, lasted about 55 minutes, and blocked two intersections in downtown St. Petersburg for 4.5 minutes each. Symbolic of the 4.5 hours that Michael Brown's body lay on Canfield Drive in Ferguson, Missouri. And that was after being shot and killed by Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson, of course. Now famous incident. I covered this event for Spectrum 360 Media and photographed and edited a video of the march. So we'll get to that as well. And that will be on segment two That'll be recorded audio of the new video we created covering the March Against Police Brutality in St. Petersburg, Florida, this last Saturday again. Saturday, the 6th of December, 2014. Now, you can hear the audio on this program for the first time. And this is another in a long series of Spectrum 360 exclusives you will hear on no other program. You'll see the video now on my Vimeo website. Go to the Spectrum 360 radio program website and Facebook. Click on the posted program or video link, rather, to see the video. Or you can go to www.vimeo.com and see the 8-minute and 24-second video by searching Vimeo with my name. That's Mark Skogman. Last name is spelled S-K-O-G-M-A-N. That'll be the second segment. Then segment three, pre-recorded film preview audio of Pay to Play. This is an important new film that has important information about the current state of politics in the U.S. and our supposed pay-to-play system. This film was screened in Tallahassee, Florida, the state capital of Florida, last week on Tuesday, the 2nd of December, as part of events that welcomed Ronna Bazzini to Tallahassee to end her walk for campaign finance reform. She's the lady from Sarasota that walked from Sarasota to Tallahassee to publicize the need for campaign finance reform, both in the state and in the nation. Interesting. Also, we'll have more information about speaking engagements in Florida in the next few days by David Cobb. He's the spokesman for Move to Amend. Their website is www.movetoamend.org. So David Cobb in the house, or in the area. And we will have him on the house, I hope, too, because segment four is a live interview via telephone with David Cobb with the Move to Amend movement regarding the... Well, regarding basically there's two basic principles that we want changed, or two basic issues, ending the consideration of money as speech and corporate personhood. Now, he just spoke at the Fogartyville Community Media and Arts Center in Sarasota tonight, and he will be joining us from that vicinity on this program about 11:30 p.m. So look for it on or about the bottom of the hour. And if we can get to it, excuse me, recorded music with lyrics appropriate to the current situation in the country. We'll hear What's Going On by Marvin Gaye and The Revolution Starts Now by Steve Earle. Love those two songs. This should be fun and appropriate. I don't know if we'll have time or not, but if we do, we are going to play those songs. So that's the program. We've got a lot of stuff coming up for you. I just wanted to mention a couple of things here. I want to play a couple of previews here, too, that'll show you what the flavor of the program is going to be like this time. Here's a preview of the audio from the video that I just created over the last 2 days. Okay, that was one preview. That's the audio from the video of the demonstration this last Saturday night in St. Petersburg. And also, here's a preview of the promo for the film, Pay to Play.
Pay to Play is the system we have. You show up and you want to influence people and you want to have some impact there. You've got to come with money.
It's nothing but a money laundering operation.
It is the cancer underlying all the cancers, whether it's climate change, whether it's our high child poverty rates, the corruption of our food supply, that we have the highest mass incarceration rate in the world.
Yes, isn't that an interesting statistic? So that's what we're about here. And I would like to just mention a few things before we get started with the interview with Bruce Wright. A couple of things here. Number one, yesterday, that's 7 December 2014, was the 73rd anniversary of the attack by the Imperial Japanese Navy on the United States Naval and Army bases at Pearl Harbor in Hawaii that precipitated the United States entering officially into World War II. And a lot of people don't remember, actually, the involvement of the United States in World War II actually happened months earlier than that, because there were attacks in the Atlantic. And people forget that World War II for the United States didn't actually start in Hawaii on Pearl Harbor Day. Because what happened was, there was a destroyer sunk in the Atlantic in July of 1941. And that's when I officially, for myself personally, recount that the World War II started in terms of the involvement of the United States. There were over 100 sailors killed in that incident, and yet the United States did not enter into war to start World War II in July of 41. It was December of 41 when that happened. Interesting to note that, isn't it? Also, today, this is the 8th of December, 2014, the 34th anniversary of the death of John Lennon, and I'll let that speak for itself. Also, this last week on Thursday, saw the election of a new Democratic Executive Committee for Pinellas County chairperson, and that new chair for the county party of the Democratic Party in Pinellas County is Susan McGrath. Interesting to note. Okay, I'm going to start this segment by just, well, it's a joke from President Obama.
As a general rule, things don't end well if the sentence starts, "Let me tell you something I know about the Negro." You don't really need to hear the rest of it. Just a tip for you. Don't start your sentence that way.
Okay, I just thought I'd play that because, well, number one, President Obama's funny. That was a great comment. That came shortly after the situation with the Nevada rancher and the standoff with the federal authorities and the right-wing militias that came to his aid and resisted those federal authorities. And he said some rather racist remarks after that, and that was President Obama's take on all of that. And it just reminds us that we don't always know what we think we know when we talk about other races and other people. And that was a funny example of that. So, Reverend Bruce Wright, former co-host of this program, welcome to Spectrum 360. Let's get our discussion started.
Glad to be here.
Wow. Is that mic hot? You don't need to put that all the way down your throat, Bruce.
Yeah, really. No, it sounds cool because that gets you that kind of low Barry White kind of sound. Anyway.
Yeah, that low resonance. Anyway, both of us were, this last Saturday, which was the 6th of December, 2014, we were both in St. Petersburg at the rally and march against police brutality. Bruce was a marcher, and I was a documenter. I attended as media for Spectrum 360 Media. You can find that video that I recorded that night on my Vimeo channel. You can go to Spectrum 360 radio program on Facebook. Click on the link there. That's the easiest way to get to the video. It's 8 minutes, 24 seconds of what happened on the streets that night. And just briefly, what Bruce participated in and I recorded was a march against police brutality that went for 55 minutes and actually blocked two intersections with what was called a die-in, where people would lay on the street itself at the intersections, blocked the intersections for 4.5 minutes. The reason it was done for 4.5 minutes was it was symbolic of the 4.5 hours that Michael Brown's body laid on Canfield Drive in Ferguson, Missouri, after being killed by Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson. So that's basically an encapsulation of what the event was. It was pretty dramatic. And Bruce, you had a lot of interesting comments about the composition of the marchers on your program, Revolutionary Road, just probably 20, 30 minutes ago. Would you reiterate that for the Spectrum 360 audience? I thought your observations were very good, and I'd like our audience to hear them on this program.
Well, yes. Thanks, Mark. It was amazing to me. Thanks as well, Terry, for having me on. It was an amazing march to me in several ways. And the one thing I made note of early on in my discussion on the Revolutionary Road radio show was that the makeup of the marchers was predominantly young. I'd say 75% of the people were under 30, probably even under 25, and that the majority of the marchers were equally proportioned between white marchers and African marchers, as well as some Latino marchers. And that was interesting as well. You know, I've been an organizer of demonstrations and protests, direct actions, housing takeovers, a number of things throughout the years in the Tampa Bay area. I was involved in the Occupy movements. What struck me about this was that I can't recall the last time we had that many marchers in the streets, taking over the streets. Of course, I've been in marches with the Uhuru, which consistently have taken over the streets, as well as recently have done it around Ferguson. And I've done poor people's marches, which have been pretty substantial in number. The poor people's marches I've done generally have been, like the Uhuru marches, unpermitted. That is, we didn't seek a permit to march. This was also true of this march. And not only did we not seek a permit, but we marched in the streets, took over the streets, both sides of the streets in some cases. And as Mark mentioned, at two different intersections, one at Beach Drive and 3rd Avenue North, the other at Central Avenue and 3rd Street, we blocked the entire intersection and did a die-in. It was also interesting to note that law enforcement, apparently ordered by the new chief, who happens to be African, who was the former chief up here in Clearwater, were ordered to stand down and to not attempt to stop what we were doing, and in fact blocked traffic. I think that the chief at some level did not want to have some kind of incident that would be akin to what's been happening around the country. So this is very interesting, because I think most of us expected arrest marching in the streets. Most of us expected definitely arrests when we blocked the intersection. So there were some things that were very unique about this, and it seems like a whole new group of young people, post-Occupy young people, are energized now about issues related to the police state.
It does seem that way. I wish I could have been there, but I've seen some on video, and I know some of the organizers who are quite young. And I've been involved in numerous events for quite some time, too, and we're always rather frustrated at the lack of young people that are there, and always saying, what do we got to do to get the young people out? This is something that they really organized and drove and showed up, and it was really gratifying to see that, very exciting.
Yes, I have to agree. Something I'd like to mention just briefly is, when I was covering the march, I was walking along with my video camera, and this is early in the march, just a few minutes after it started, and I went by a group of police officers who were standing on a corner, and the march had already passed these officers. And I was just curious, so I stopped and said, are there any plans to coordinate a tactical response if intersections are blocked, and are there possibly going to be arrests made or anything like that? Well, the officers refused to answer, and for a good reason. You know, if I was them, I would probably do the same thing, but I was curious. I was just wondering if they had a preset policy regarding that, and they apparently did not, and they didn't want to reveal their plans to me as a journalist either, which, you know, I can understand that. That's just common sense, but I thought there might be possibly a stated policy in place, but apparently there wasn't. And I have noticed all the way since 2012 what I have called ever since the Republican National Convention in Tampa as the Tampa model, where the police manage the demonstrations, they keep everyone safe, they prevent any criminal acts, but they don't attempt to stop completely unpermitted marches. They allow the marches to go, and then they just manage them and also just coordinate things so that everyone is safe and that traffic is managed properly, et cetera, which they did, I thought, a very good job of on Saturday night. So I just thought there was an interesting aside there as well. But I do have to agree with you that it was very gratifying, the constituencies that were represented in the marchers. There was a lot of young people, like you said, a big mix of races, and a very strong showing. I counted myself, my estimate of the crowd in the park was 110, but it went up to 160 on the march. There were about at least another 50 people that joined, which was about another 50%. in addition to what was in the park. So the march gained participants as it went along, and it was at least 160 people on the march. I would say between, you know, a good estimate would be between 150 and 170, 160 being my estimate. So that was very gratifying as well. And the fact that it was peaceful, it was nonviolent, there were no arrests. Everyone was able to express their free speech rights, and it was all done safely. So I thought it was very successful.
It was actually a family event. One of the speakers that I saw in video, I believe, was 8 years old.
Yes.
Yes, there was a woman there with a stroller, had an infant.
See, here's the thing. This march attracted a wide range of people because it is not just young, late teens and adult black males that are being killed, and I call it murder, by the police.
Yes.
But it's also teenagers and children. I mean, the Tamir Rice thing is so egregious, and there's even a younger one, a 7-year-old girl that was killed in... And the police ended up saying they raided the wrong house. I mean, this stuff is so routine. And we try to make a big deal about how many, you know, how dangerous it is to be a police officer. And the only thing I'll say is it's dangerous because they've created their own danger by not connecting to communities, which is one of the calls made by the WHO is black community control of the police. In other words, the police need to be accountable to the communities in which they police, and they should live in those communities. I don't think that's an unreasonable demand, but it's also worth noting that in this situation that's occurring, you know, rampantly all over the country, that it's such a broad range of people that have been killed by the police. And you know, even the whole notion of body cameras, the reality is it's not going to do anything. Let's be honest, because that whole thing with Eric Garner was videotaped. And the only person arrested and had anything done to him was the video...
Videographer. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me take an issue with that, because actually, I mean, I understand why you say that. And it definitely is not going to solve the problem in and of itself. It also depends on how it's applied. But there's been experience in a city in California where there have been an implementation of body cameras on police, and they've seen dramatic improvements in parameters related to police violence. Police violence is way down. Police complaints are way down. Injuries and arrests are down. It's just greatly improved the situation. Now, it's not going to fix 100% of problems 100% of the time, and I think that's why people take the position that you have, and I agree with that on that point. But it does look like there can be major improvements made just with body cameras. Now, they can also manipulate the video, such as in the Eric Garner case, where it was a clear case of him being choked to unconsciousness, and yet there still wasn't an indictment, and there should have been. So that's just one component of the system. The other components have to function as well, but I think that's a really good start. So I disagree to a large extent with what you said.
Well, one thing I think that we need also is we need some kind of a citizens review or a separate procedure for violent acts that have police involved. Do you have the prosecutor take these cases like Eric Garner and the one in Ferguson? Prosecutors and police are allies. The prosecutors need the police to make their cases. And then it's almost really a conflict of interest to suddenly have a prosecutor come along and try and make a case against someone who the vast majority of the time is his ally and his partner in the work he does. It's just the system doesn't make sense.
Yes, exactly.
No, not at all. And there needs to be citizens review boards that are elected by the communities and within the communities, where the communities control the police in their own community. And they have to have teeth. They have to have hiring and firing capability and the ability to bring indictments when criminal acts occur.
Oh, I totally agree with that. And let me make one real quick point on that. I was watching the coverage last week. It was last week on MSNBC. As the demonstration started to happen in New York City after the decision by the grand jury in the Eric Garner case was announced, there was the former head of the ACLU in New York. He was a man, I apologize, I don't remember his name. He was a middle-aged man. And he said that the grand jury system needs to be abolished and that we should not have grand juries, we should not have secret testimony, and that it should be an open court adversarial hearing, and that there should be a special unit that prosecutes crimes involving criminal acts by police or violence by police, and that it has to be totally separate from the from the General Prosecutor's Office and totally separate from the police itself and not an internal affairs unit at all.
No.
And I just sat there and went, you know, that's exactly what the solution
is. It's totally obvious. If I were a prosecutor, I certainly wouldn't want to prosecute a police officer, and the next day have to go work with these people as my partners again. They're not going to be too happy to see me. It just doesn't work.
No, it doesn't, and nor does internal affairs. All one needs to do is reread the story of Serpico, or if you rather watch a movie that loosely talks about it, you can see the one that was made back in the 70s.
I've never seen that. The one with Al Pacino.
Yeah, a great movie. And, you know, to this day, Serpico is still a marked man. He gets death threats routinely, and we know that they're coming from law enforcement. Or how about the captain? I can't remember his name, that was part of the Occupy movement, and he has consistently been out there with marchers challenging police officers in what they have been doing and how it is inappropriate and aggressive and really...
He's there in uniform, usually.
Yes,
he was in
he
Ferguson.
Is. Yes, he is. And, you know...
I wonder if it's the same guy that was at SOA Watch
yes,
2 years ago.
Yes, it is
ago.
That same guy.
It is the same
he's
guy.
He's a great guy, and he
he's
shows up in uniform.
He's a great guy, and he's a... But he's a rare thing, unfortunately.
Yes.
You know, it seems to me that we have to remember the complicity is also at play here. Not just with the officers that actually do the killing and murdering of... oppressed peoples, but officers that stand by and watch or participate in one form or another, or ignore, you know, and bring up that blue wall of silence. Like I mentioned before, years ago, I went through the screening to be a police officer. I know some would find that pretty outrageous, given my views.
Yeah, definitely tell this story. This is important. I want our listeners to listen to this closely.
In the early 1980s, I was going through criminal justice major at St. Pete Junior College, and that was my intention at that time. And I went through the screening process. There's a physical kind of agility kind of thing you have to do. And yes, at that time, I was in much better shape. But there's also a oral board review, and everyone who wants to be a police officer at that time had to go through oral board reviews, and police officers... sometimes higher-ups from several jurisdictions in Pinellas County interviewed me, and one of the questions they asked was, what would I do if I pulled over someone who had committed a crime and found out that they were a police officer? And the first thing I said, in my naivete, I suppose, was, of course, I would arrest them. They committed a crime. I was, at that point, like a deer caught in the headlights. Every single officer on that board gave me a blank stare. It's as if I just said the worst thing you could ever say and violated the idea of the blue wall of silence. It was that that convinced me, and other things, of course, to not go through this idea of being a police officer. You know, when I was younger, I idealized the whole notion of a cop. You know, we had our neighborhood cops that knew everyone, that walked a beat, and, you know, they weren't around there to beat you over the head. And, of course, this was a kind of... idyllic representation of white privilege, true, because in black communities and other minority communities, cops have been cracking heads for years. But there was still this sense that you just couldn't operate with impunity in the sense that they do now and be as militarized. I mean, they're jacked up. And I can't help but wonder, some of the officers that look really buff, whether they're doing steroids or things like that, which plays a big role in how people behave.
There's certainly a lot of rage.
Yes.
Well, yeah,
a lot of rage.
Yeah, and steroid abuse is connected to those kinds of you know aspects of behavior. You can see that in the military and in professional athletes. Yeah, that's a fact.
And not only that, but the choice person that is asked to be a police officer often is a military veteran. And we have all these officers coming back from the Iraq and Afghan wars and other wars that often have PTSD, and they're the last person you want in a highly militarized uniform looking similar to like they did in Iraq or Afghanistan, going in communities of color and assuming that there is a criminal element simply because of the color of their skin or their age.
Yes. Well, we're coming to the end of our discussion here. Bruce, I thank you so much for... staying late, as we call it, after the end of your program, right preceding Spectrum 360 and being a guest on Spectrum 360's interview subject. my image from the march is you laying on the ground as I photographed you laying there with you in the die-in in the middle of the street in St. Petersburg.
It was quite profound.
Yeah, well, that was great.
Thanks again, Mark and Terry, for having me on. Hey, say hey to David Cobb for me. Tell him he owes me a phone call or I owe him one or something.
Okay.
But I'm sure it'll be a great interview. Thank you.
Okay, very Thanks, good. Bruce. All right, on to the next segment. We're going to play the audio from the video that I just produced over the last few days here. And that is the audio from what we've just been discussing just now. And here you go. This is the first time at Spectrum 360. This is a Spectrum 360 exclusive, the video and the audio. Remember, you can find the link on the Spectrum 360 radio program Facebook website to get the link to see this 8-minute, 24-second video of what happened in St. Petersburg Saturday night.
Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360.
Black lives matter!
Now, for our listeners, what you're hearing right now is the little bit of audio that was generated while the die-in happened at the intersection of Central Avenue and 4th Street South. So there we were. And there were at least approximately 70 people laying in the street in a die-in demonstrating what happened to Michael Brown and blocking the intersection. And the police just managed the traffic and kept everyone safe, and it was peaceful. So that's what's happening at this segment. You can't see that in video because this is radio. And this happened twice during this march. This is the first time of what we're hearing right now.
No justice.
No peace.
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 Justice.
Justice.
Okay, I'm going to abbreviate this segment a little bit because we want to get David Cobb on the program, and I want to play that brief audio of the film preview for that film that we've been talking about before we get to David. So I'm going to do that right now, and then we'll go right to David Cobb.
Are we going to make an announcement first?
Yes, and we're going to make two announcements first, and they're going to happen right now.
Okay. Some of the listeners probably know that I will never pass up a chance to pick on Duke Energy, the greedy monopoly that supplies power here in Pinellas County. So I just wanted to let you know of the latest outrage. Fresh off convincing the Public Service Commission to gut renewable energy standards for the utilities, they are now hoping possibly to get into the fracking business.
Unbelievable.
And, yeah. In fact, Florida Power and Light just had a hearing before the PSC asking to get into fracking, and they don't think they should have to pay for taking the risk of doing this exploratory fracking. They think they should bill the ratepayers for it. And Duke is also waiting in the wings with the same request. They want to go fracking on our dime. So enough of this. I want to let everybody know there's going to be an event this Thursday at 4 p.m. There's going to be a Duke Naughty or Nice rally. We're going to bring him some coal.
Yeah, this is great.
We're going to bring Duke some coal because they've been very naughty this year. It's going to be at 4:30 this Thursday in front of the Duke headquarters. Same bat time, same bat place, 299 First Avenue North in St. Pete. So please come out and let Duke know how Santa feels about their behavior this year and help bring Duke some coal for Christmas.
Oh, that is great. I love it. Okay, here's the preview of the film, Pay to Play.
Pay to Play is the system we have. You show up and you want to influence people and you want to have some impact there, you've got to come with money.
It's nothing but a money laundering operation.
It is the cancer underlying all the cancers, whether it's climate change, whether it's our high child poverty rates, the corruption of our food supply, that we have the highest mass incarceration rate in the world.
Voicemails, people saying we just need to know where to send the check, PACs, and I've had to call them back and tell them that I appreciate their support. I can't accept their check.
Probably the worst example of a pay-to-play catastrophe is this ALEC, where corporate lobbyists and legislators sit down together and come up with crazy laws that hurt America.
Yeah, the revolution starts now. Yeah, the revolution starts now in your own backyard, in your own hometown. What you do? Houston and the land, just body high to revolution starts now.
And there you have it. That's the audio of the film preview for the film Pay to Play. And I want to welcome to the program at this time the spokesman for Move to Amend, David Cobb. David Cobb, welcome to Spectrum 360. I just want to remind you that you were actually on my previous program that I had before this program, which was America's Voice back in 2012. And I was actually with you up in Madison, Wisconsin last year in August for the Democracy Convention as well. But I didn't get to talk to you very much. We were both so busy. But welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mark, and thank you for your work as a people's journalist, which is exactly what we need in this country.
I've been doing an awful lot of that, so thank you. And I wanted to ask you, well, basically three things. I wanted to find out about the event tonight that welcomed Ronna Bazzini home, the 81-year-old woman who walked from Sarasota to Tallahassee, more than 200 miles, for campaign finance reform. And then also what happened last week up in Tallahassee when she arrived in Tallahassee for that event. I had intended to have been there, but I just got so tied up here, I just couldn't do it. And I was really chagrined that I wasn't able to make it. So I want to hear more from your perspective what happened there. So take it away, David.
Well, last week, as you pointed out, Ronna Bazzini culminated a 400-mile march that she went from Tallahassee, from Sarasota to Tallahassee, marching in support of the We the People Amendment, a constitutional amendment to abolish in its entirety the illegitimate court-created idea that money is political speech and that corporations have constitutional rights. And, Mark, it's really important that we make it clear this is not merely about campaign finance reform. Yes, we've got to get money out of elections, but we've also got to abolish in its entirety that illegitimate and court-created idea that a corporation has constitutional rights.
Oh, I totally agree. And you put it so well.
That doctrine allows corporations to be able to overturn democratically enacted laws, campaign finance laws, worker safety laws, public health laws. So it's not just about campaign finance law.
Yeah, it's kind of the Trans-Pacific Partnership of campaign campaign money rules, isn't it? And associate producer Terry Weeks is here, too.
Again, it's not just about money in elections.
Yes, that's
isn't
true.
That the basis,
right.
Isn't that the basis on which some of these corporations have been suing to get out of some of the requirements of Obamacare? Asserting that they have First Amendment freedom of religion rights as corporations?
That's correct, and that's a very good point. And shows it's not just about campaign finance laws, but if a corporation can claim constitutional rights, they can claim that they have a right to exercise of religion, which is, of course, ridiculous. But they can also claim that the 14th Amendment allows them to get out of environmental protection laws or worker safety laws or public health laws. So, but the Hobby Lobby case
exactly
that you're referencing is a perfect example. I mean, the idea that a corporation has a freedom of religion to begin with is just absurd.
And that is absurd. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And you know, the American people agree with the absurdity of it. One of the things that's exciting is that over 80% of the American people are in agreement with us. And that 80% cuts across political party lines. In other words, Democrats, Republicans, Greens, Libertarians, Independents alike are all in agreement and united on this issue. You know, liberals, conservatives, moderates are in agreement. It cuts across racial lines, gender lines. I mean, this issue is, I mean, one of the ironies is that Citizens United versus FEC actually united the citizens in this country in support of a constitutional amendment. So, it's going to. The only question is not if, it's when we succeed.
Yes, understood. And you put it so well. And, you know, I really have to defer to you and my associate producer, Terry Weeks, because you're both lawyers and have analyzed these issues so well. So, and I just love hearing you speak, David. I've heard you speak multiple times. Every time you're in the Tampa Bay area, I'm there. In fact, I'm hoping to come down with your permission, down to Venice tomorrow night and do a video recording that we could post on our new website here, putting a lot of video that I've been creating as a citizen journalist on Vimeo. And I'd love to do that with your permission, if that's okay.
I would love you to do that. And please do say, come by and reintroduce yourself, Mark. And I want to invite your listeners to please come out to the event tomorrow night in Venice, Florida. Will be, I think you have the information on exactly where.
Yeah, it's the Unitarian Universalist Congregation Church of Venice. And the physical address is 1971, that's 1971, Pinebrook Road. And that's Venice, Florida, 34292. And I believe the event starts there at 7 p.m., is that correct?
That's correct, 7 p.m. at the UU Church.
Yeah, there we go. So search that address. That should be pretty easy to find. Venice is not a huge town. But it's a beautiful place.
It is a beautiful place, absolutely. And I have the honor of being in Florida from December 2nd all the way to the 16th. I'll be touring across country. I came, of course, as you mentioned, in support of Rana Bazzini's walk. I was honored and proud to march with her that last day as she marched triumphantly into the state capitol.
How did the press conference go that day?
You know, it was very good, very well attended. There were over 120 people there. We had television crews, radio crews, print media. It really was quite impressive to see that issue or see Rana celebrated by not only other Floridians, but also the media is paying attention. And I mean, you know, mainstream so-called corporate media was there as well as citizen journalists like yourself.
Well, if an issue would resonate anywhere, it should resonate in Florida, where the pay-to-play mentality in Tallahassee has been, I think, very, very apparent to a lot of people for a long time, and I think a lot of people are tired of it.
Yes, I agree with that.
I think you're right. And let's, you know, it's important to recognize just how successful Move to Amend has been. We were 12 people in a living room in 2010. Today, we're 380,000 people and growing every day. We've helped 600 communities pass resolutions of support for Move to Amend. We have helped 16 states pass resolutions of support for our campaign. And most importantly, we've been on the ballot 350 times. That's local ballots, so that not just city council members are voting, not just county supervisors are voting, but ordinary citizens get a chance to weigh in. You know, we've been on the ballot 350 times. We've won every single one of them. We just don't lose, and that includes in a very progressive places like Madison or Boston or San Francisco.
It includes St. Petersburg. Our city council voted on that amendment as well.
That is absolutely correct. It was another example of the fact that, you know, people from across the political spectrum. We've also won, though, at the ballot box in Salt Lake City, Utah, and in the state of Montana. We won in Waukesha, Wisconsin, which is famous as the hometown of Republican Tea Party Governor Scott Walker, where they haven't voted for a Democrat for president or Congress, a Democrat for Congress in over 40 years, and we won there too. The point I'm making is that we are winning everywhere in so-called red areas, so-called blue areas, green, purple, it doesn't matter. We win everywhere. And in the last election cycle, Alachua, Florida was on the ballot, and we won there too. So we encourage people to contact us at movetoamend.org, sign up, and more importantly, get involved. Let's get more communities passing resolutions of support. Let's get more candidates for office, whether they're incumbents or challengers, on record to say whether they will support this constitutional amendment, because if we don't actually get money out of politics, if we don't get a handle on these runaway corporations, they're going to destroy the planet we depend upon for life itself.
Yes, I agree with that. We're well on our way to doing that already. It's something I've been very, very concerned about. And you know, these things all connect together. In fact, that point is made. You know, the trailer that I just played for the film Pay to Play, there's a woman that's interviewed there, and that's exactly what she says, is that all these issues are connected in one way or the other, and they all influence each other. And we've got to solve these all these pieces of the puzzle. We're going to save ourselves. So, yeah, I'm very concerned about it.
Yeah, you know, I think that we are fast approaching that moment in history where we're either going to win everything or we can't win anything.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I've been thinking that for quite some time.
Right? Look at it, the ecological crisis that we're in, the political crisis, the economic crisis, all of these things are so connected to a runaway economic system based on exploitation and oppression, a system that allows a small ruling elite to actually run everything. And let's remember that the Occupy movement really did a phenomenal job of galvanizing ordinary people into recognizing that it's illegitimate for 1% to run rule 99% of us. But this is just not the way it's supposed to be. We, the people, are sovereign. We're supposed to be in charge in this country. And it's going to take a mass movement that is broad, deep, conscious, educated, and committed to make the sort of change that we so desperately need. And again, we're encouraging your listeners to get involved with us. We're at movetoamend.org. You can give us a call at 707-269-0984. Or you can come and meet us in person. Again, I'll be at the Unitarian Universalist Church tomorrow night, 7 p.m. in Venice. Again, we're just ordinary citizens who are doing what it takes to save this republic.
Well, Dave, I'd say that you're more than an ordinary citizen, because I've seen you do multiple times do an extraordinary job at explaining this issue and simplifying it and getting people galvanized on it. I think you've just done such an excellent job. And everywhere I've seen you speak, it's just been just uniformly excellent. So I think you've done a super job at this, and I want to compliment you on that. Very good.
Well, I thank you so much. That's incredibly kind of you to say. I do know this, that the kind of systemic change that MoveToMend calls for, it really is the equivalent of the abolitionist movement or the women's suffrage movement, the trade union movement, the civil rights movement. You know, these movements were broad and deep. We can't make just trivial changes in the system. We've got to make deep systemic structural changes. And that's actually going to take all of us.
Yeah, and it's going to take changing how people think. One thing that happened during the Reagan years, the so-called great communicator, Ronald Reagan, really delegitimized government in the people's eyes. Government is the enemy. Government is the problem. Get government off our back. Government is us. Government is the people.
Yeah.
And if it's right. not, then we sure, heck, better people. Take it back.
Right. That's so well said. I mean, you know, the Constitution of the United States begins, "We the people." Those are hallowed words in this country because they remind us that, done correctly, we the people are government. It's not just that it's our government, O-U-R. We are government, A-R-E. It's supposed to be us collectively representing what it is that we want in our society. And this idea of delegitimizing government is actually an anti-American sentiment.
I agree with that.
I think they're traitors. I think the people that want to drown government in the bathtub are actually traitors.
I think that's right. And it certainly is the antithesis of the American Revolution that fought a bloody war against the sovereign king to say, no, we're sovereign ourselves. We actually have the authority to rule over ourselves. So, and I also think it's time for us to acknowledge that we are witnessing the emergence of a new kind of fascism in this country. Remember, Benito Mussolini, the political philosopher.
Oh, yes.
And he wasn't just a dictator. He mm-hmm. was genuinely a philosopher. And he
yes.
said fascism, more appropriately, should be called corporatism.
Because absolutely.
The economic might of the corporations with the military might of the nation state. And he thought that was a good thing. And that's what we're witnessing in this country.
I couldn't agree with you more. That is a very accurate rendition of that quote by Benito Mussolini. He did say, you know, it's a better term for it is corporatism, and that's definitely what we've got in this country, especially when you see how police are treating ordinary citizens, how they're being militarized. I mean, this is more and more starting to remind me of Nazi Germany, and I don't mean to be alarmist by this. You know, I'm not Alex Jones, but he's not wrong about everything. You know, there are definitely
right.
things that are happening, you know, that should not be happening and that are dangerous. The NSA, this police militarization, you know, 160 bases abroad in foreign countries for who knows what. An out of control CIA that was involved in killing our own president in the 60s. I mean, these are serious problems, and it seems to be slowly getting worse. But I see the tide turning now, so we can get things started to be reversed and started to correct these things. And that's what's encouraging, especially just the last weeks. You've seen all these demonstrations across the country. That is very, very encouraging. And David, we're down to our last 30 seconds here before we close the program. I just want to thank you so much for coming on. And on short notice, I'll have to say, you're about the quickest interview I think I've ever booked for this program. I posed the question. You said yes in like 20 seconds. And I thank you so much for that. Again, tomorrow night's event is at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Venice, 1971 Pine Brook Road, Venice, Florida. And I will be there to see David again in person. So thank you again, David.
Thank you so much. Good night.
Good night. Spectrum 360 is produced by Sunburst Media Productions and originates from St. Petersburg, Florida. Executive producer, host, audio engineer, and senior reporter, Mark Skogman. Associate producer, Terry Weeks. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. for 1 hour and online anytime via podcast. To access the podcast, go to www.facebook.com/Spectrum360 Radio Program and click on the program link. Or go to www.tantalk1340.com, click on podcasts, and click on Spectrum 360. Thank you to all our listeners and supporters and the staff of Spectrum 360. Listen next week for another entertaining Spectrum 360 radio program.
That's all, folks.